I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. Your time is valuable, so we've edited this episode for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We're just a few weeks away from when Vermont's new recreational marijuana policy goes into effect. But on July 1st, you'll legally be able to consume marijuana, possess it, and grow it, but you cannot buy it. So how do you start growing if you don't have someone willing to share a cutting or share seeds with you? Well, today we're going to go over all the questions about growing marijuana legally and where the legal gray area is. We're joined by Tim Fair, an attorney who focuses on the cannabis industry. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having us, Jane.
And Kendall Smith is co-owner of White River Grow Pro, a hydroponics and gardening supply company. Kendall, it's nice to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me too.
Tim, I want to start out just by saying, obviously, this is not an endorsement for growing marijuana today on the show. That's not our aim. But there are a lot of questions about how exactly this is going to work, because you cannot buy marijuana, you cannot buy marijuana seeds, you cannot buy clones. But, you know, there is this ability to share, there's an ability to give. And so I thought, first of all, maybe we should just go over the overview of what's actually going to be legal on July 1st.
All right. I think that's a great question. I think it's a question that a lot of people have been thinking about with the July 1st date coming up so quickly here. Before we start, I'd like to preface that nothing we talk about here should be constituted as legal advice. Legal advice needs to be given to specific situations with specific sets of facts. Today, we're talking more broad generalities.
Mm-hmm. So, is that something you're worried about, that people, you know, are going to say, but a lawyer told me I could do it?
It's something that when we talk, you know, to a broad audience, needs to be mentioned. It's important people realize that while we are talking, again, the broad terms, their specific situation may differ.
Okay, but so July 1st.
July
1st.
As of July 1st, it will be legal for Vermonters to grow up to 6 plants in their home.
At any given time.
At any given time. That's 2 mature, 4 immature plants, and that is per household. So not each adult, but per household.
Okay. What else?
Possession of up to 1 ounce of cannabis will be legal with anybody kind of moseying around. However, interestingly enough, any cannabis that's harvested from plants that you grow at home will not be included in that 1 ounce limit. So theoretically, you could grow as much as you would like at home, and as long as it's secured in a manner that would avoid anyone from under the age of 21 getting access to it, you could have as much as you want.
Right, because if you are growing at any given time, if you have a couple of mature plants and you're harvesting and suddenly you had more than 1 ounce and you were over the legal limit, that would be a problem. So that's written into the law that if you're growing, you are allowed to harvest what you've grown and keep it in a secure location. But you can't then go walk down the street with, you know, 10 ounces in your pocket.
No, absolutely not. Anything above 1 ounce is still a criminal offense.
Right, if you're sort of outside of your home and it's outside of a locked area.
That is correct.
And in terms of growing, you are allowed to grow, but you are not allowed to just pop it in your raised beds. What do you have to do to secure your operation?
So the statute talks about a secure location, which restricts access to anyone under the age of 21 or anyone that the grower does not want there. The specifics on that, not real clear in the bill. This is definitely going to be one of those questions that ultimately may end up being decided by the Supreme Court. But I would say, and I do say to my clients, be reasonable. What makes sense? Are you going to be putting it right out there in the living room where everyone walking through can see it? Probably not a great idea. However, if you're going to have it in a room, perhaps with a locked door, some sort of secured access, that's going to be something that's going to be a lot more reasonable.
Or if you chose to grow it outside, as long as you put a fence around it, presumably.
A fence would be one step. You may want some no trespassing signs. You may want a high private security fence. You may want locked access. Each one of these things can provide a greater argument to say for the grower that, yes, I took reasonable steps to secure this.
So, Kendall Smith, we're going to focus today on questions around growing, and partly because it seems like one of those sort of chicken and egg things. You know, you can grow, but you can't buy the seeds to start your grow operation. So, you know, legally, how would people even get started? And I'm curious what you are hearing from and telling people who come in and see you who want to start growing on July 1st.
Sure. Yeah, it's tough. It's a question everybody has. A couple of things that we tell people. Seeds are readily available online. That may be, again, a bit of the gray market, not recommending that anybody order their seeds online, but I know they are readily available. technically they're – my understanding is so long as they're sold for novelty purposes and not to start, that it's okay to sell them online. So you could maybe have them mailed to you as novelty purposes, and then now you're in possession of cannabis seeds. So not suggesting that anybody do it that way, but that may be a way that they can do it.
You mean people are actually selling them online and saying these are bird seed or these are for decoration, but really that's just to get around the law and everybody knows what's really happening there?
I suppose so. You know, there certainly are plenty of people who are collecting cannabis genetics, not to start them now, but just to have them. So I think.
But that's illegal if you're doing it, you know, right?
Again, I can't answer that question, the legality of it. There is, you know, is it in I think that, you know, again, that's the gray market, the gray line. I don't understand the federal law around that myself, but I don't – a lot of this is going to come down to, you know, is any of it legal really? If federally, it's not. So there's going to be are you willing to grow? What are you – it's kind of a risk-reward scenario with a lot of people. So seeds is going to be a tough one. There are a few legal ways that people are going to be able to get clones, and that's probably going to be the best way for Vermonters to get started.
Well, so let's get into this. And for people who are unaware, a clone is basically like a cutting.
A clone is a cutting from one of the female plants, which is what we want. And that's most likely going to be rooted. You know, we can cut a branch off of a cannabis plant and through a number of different methods have that branch reroot and start a new plant.
And when you say that's how you think most people will get started, is that because somebody's already growing and so you go to that friend and say, could I get a clone from you? I mean, is that what you think will be happening?
Sure. You know, I mean, a lot of people know somebody who has a medical card. So that's great. A lot of people know somebody who smokes or may smoke cannabis, so you'll be able to ask them if they have genetics. The other thing is that there are some great consulting companies who have been doing this already with medical patients. Nick Carabellis from Greener Mountain Consulting, Matt Leonetti from Homegrown Consulting. I believe that they're legally able to bring clones as part of their service.
But so they can't sell them.
No, but they can give them to you as part of their service. And bring you the genetics. So they're not selling you the clones. You're paying for the service and they can bring genetics with them.
Let's go to Mark, who's calling in from Berlin. Hi, Mark. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm curious to know if either one of you have any perspective about why the legislature picked the date of July 1st, because anyone who's grown anything for any reason, even with a minimal experience, would have started their seeds long before July 1st. So why do you think they picked that particular date, other than its proximity to July 4th?
I'm not sure that that was a consideration either, the July 4th date, Mark. But Kendall, let me start with you, and then Tim, I want to come back to you. But Kendall, in terms of growing outside, if somebody wanted to start growing marijuana, would July 1st even be a good day for them to be starting?
Well, you know, technically we'd want to start a lot earlier, but if you got a clone on and around July 1st and got it going well, you would be able to grow a small plant that would get big enough to produce some nice flowers by the end of the season. However, growing outside has its own issues, and putting a plant outside doesn't mean it's going to be successful anyway.
But if you're using natural light, the natural growth cycle of the marijuana plant is really attuned to how much sunlight it's getting, right? And so that's part of the question about the growing season and cycle?
Sure, yeah. It actually tunes into the dark cycle, and so it starts flowering at about 12 hours of darkness per day. And so, yes, here in Vermont, our days get short really fast and we get really cold really fast. And it is very difficult to have a cannabis plant go full term outdoors in Vermont.
Tim, do you have a sense of why the law starts on July 1st?
You know, it's purely speculative, of course, but I would guess that the legislature was a lot more interested in giving some time for people to get used to this, specifically law enforcement. I think that was a lot more of their priority than trying to optimize the growing cycle for those who wish to partake in home grow.
you know, I'm going to see if we can look this up for you, Mark, as well. But I have this feeling in the back of my head that there are a lot of laws that actually start halfway through the year, so that it's more of a sort of natural time that laws often start. If it's not a January 1st law, it's often a July 1st.
Yes, and that's, you know, the familiarity.
We're talking here about clones specifically is what Kendall brought up. And of course, you know, clone is a cutting of a female plant. And so you'd be basically growing a clone. Tim, do you have a sense of how that kind of swapping is getting started, sharing? Are you hearing about ways that people are getting their hands on clones already and thinking about that?
Absolutely. Well, most people who are interested in starting a home grow after July 1st have friends who may have partaken in cannabis use in the past. And most of them will have a friend who is willing to share, willing to gift a clone. Clones are definitely the best way to get started. Generally know they're female, much easier to take root than trying to start with a seed. And again, a relatively easy thing to procure from someone who has been perhaps growing illicitly. But the other reality is that even if someone wanted to grow and didn't know anyone involved in the industry, it would be simply a drive to Massachusetts. Massachusetts recreational adult use market will be going online July 1st. And while it will not be at full speed at that point, there are certainly opportunities and places in which to buy both seeds, clones, plants, and then bring them right back home to Vermont.
Once you're crossing state lines, do you have any greater liability in terms of federal law, though? I mean, you can go across to Massachusetts, but then you have interstate commerce, essentially.
Of course. And, I mean, you're breaking federal law the minute you take possession of any amount of cannabis with a THC content of over 0.3%. It is still classified as a Schedule I controlled substance, according to federal law. So by taking possession of it, you're breaking the law. By crossing a state line, you're breaking the law. However, you're not breaking the law in Massachusetts under state law, nor are you breaking the law in Vermont under Vermont law. And the question is going to be, does the U.S. attorney in Vermont, do they intend to spend resources to arrest every single person crossing the border from Massachusetts back to Vermont with small amounts of personal use cannabis, whether it's flower, whether it's a seedling, whether it's a clone? Is there a risk? Absolutely.
Is it a greater risk?
I don't believe it's much of a risk at all. It's so negligible, given the legality in both states and given the limited amount of resources at the U.S. Attorney's Office, that I would be very surprised to see anybody being harassed for individual amounts. Now, that's not saying large quantities crossing a state border is a whole different story.
Given that that our neighboring states are starting up and regional states are starting up a tax and regulate system and a legal sales system, do you see Vermont being at a disadvantage in that particular arena because we do not have a regulated market?
I mean, I think a regulated market would be better. I think that we will have a regulated market. I believe fully that by July 1st, 2019, we'll be establishing a taxed and regulated system here in Vermont. At a disadvantage, not necessarily. This is a long process. It's not something that happens overnight. There are going to be speed bumps. Whether we establish it this year, next year, it is an inevitability. And in fact, this way, maybe we can learn from Massachusetts a little bit and learn from some of their mistakes when we implement our own next year.
Kendall Smith, when we talk about some of the laws around what you are allowed to have when you grow marijuana, as we mentioned, it's 4 immature plants and 2 mature plants at any given time. Can you describe the difference between an immature plant and a mature plant?
Well, I guess for me, in terms of what we're talking about, I would call any mature plant as one that you are putting into flower. So if you're growing indoors, we switch the light cycle in order to cause flowering. Once you've made that decision, unless you're sexing plants and trying to find the males from the females, once you've decided that you're flowering these plants, call it 2 females and call it good. Don't push the luck at all.
What would the difference look like for someone who's uninitiated? It will surprise no one to know that I have never grown marijuana. So, you know, the idea of what an actual plant looks like as it transitions to that stage, you know, may be as unclear to other people as it is to me visually.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, one of the things I suggest to anybody that wants to grow is to get yourself a good grow book. You know, as simple as cannabis can be to grow, it fills 400-page grow books. You know, you'll really want to have that information and that reference as to how to determine what's a male and a female flower. They look different, so it's fairly easy to tell once you understand what you're looking for. And, you know, to me, really when a a female plant can show a calyx and a pistil. A calyx is where the seed forms, and the pistil are little hairs that catch the pollen from the male plants. They'll form those along the stem and pre-flower. But once they really start to flower at the tip of every branch, you're going to start getting little clusters of calyxes and pistils starting. And for me, I would take that as the definition of visible flowers growing, which is what the law says. You're allowed to have two plants with visible flowers.
Tim, do you see this as a potential area for problems in the law, that difference between four immature and two mature?
You know, as the statute specifically reads, as Kendall so accurately just stated, mature marijuana plant means a female marijuana plant that has flowered and that has buds that may be observed by visual examination. Should there be an arrest? Should there be a question? Could that be something that would be taken up to the courts? Absolutely. Do I hope not? I hope not. I hope that that distinction at this point, as we kind of move forward with legalization, becomes less and less important.
We got a note from Jess in Burlington who says the description of personal cultivation would rule out most existing community-based gardens. They're generally not enclosed, and gardeners and family members are often under 21. I know the bill was intended to tie cultivation to a dwelling unit, but I can see that many people would benefit from a secure and supported growing environment. Would this kind of growing be possible, Tim?
Not yet, but I agree 100% with the sentiment. And I would say to that caller that they should be getting down to Montpelier in the next session and starting to address this with their legislatures. Let them know why. Let them know why this is important. Let them know why it's not a bad idea to be able to allow to grow cannabis in a communal setting.
Tim, this is abundantly clear, but you are not neutral on this subject. Why are you of the position that we should be having a legal marketplace for marijuana, not only legal to possess and to cultivate and to consume, but legal to sell?
You're right. I definitely have some bias in this. I've been advocating for drug policy reform, specifically cannabis reform, for quite some time now. The basic reality is this is not a dangerous substance. I know people would like to argue with that.
Yes, and we certainly – I mean that is under dispute and under dispute for medical professionals who first of all say smoking can be dangerous to anybody, and questions about who consumes and when are certainly up for debate. However –
Absolutely. And smoking, and I agree with that 100%, anything combustion. However, thankfully, the modern cannabis industry provides a lot of different methods of consumption that don't include traditional smoking. we could be here all day kind of arguing the pros and cons about it. But at the end of the day, Vermonters are responsible. And this is something that I think gets forgotten about in this debate. And I think while legalization of cannabis is new and it does scare a lot of people and creates a lot of concern, I think that people need to take a deep breath and realize that their fellow Vermonters, their neighbors, their family, their friends, they're consuming cannabis. They may be doing it privately. They may be doing it quietly so as to avoid the stigma, but they are. As of July 1st, not a whole lot is going to change. And people need to have faith that their neighbors, their friends who do choose to consume cannabis will continue to do so in a responsible way.
We're talking.
I'd like to add something,
Kendall,
here.
Go right ahead.
You know, the RAND report that that Vermont had a long time ago told us that we have between $125 and $250 million a year annual cannabis habit in Vermont. Currently, where's that money going? That's probably on its way to California, Colorado, Washington State, et cetera. And that's $125 or $250 million a year out of our economy, not in our pizza places, not in our stores, not in all of that. That's leaving our state for good.
Let's take another guest in here. Joe Tierney is a Washington, D.C.-based blogger who's written about marijuana legalization and how people in D.C. are navigating the law that allows adult use and cultivation but no framework for buying and selling, very similar to how Vermont's law will be. Joe's on the line with us now. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hey, good morning.
So, Joe, what are you seeing in D.C. Since this law has rolled out in terms of how people are actually getting started, those questions about how people are actually getting seeds or getting clones and started with cultivation on their own?
Certainly. Well, in D.C., it started mostly with groups of activists, you know, cannabis activists that wanted to give out seeds and clones to help people get their garden started. There were like hydroponic shops that we're giving out seeds to, you know, bringing customers in the door as well. There were even some head shops, which is, you know, people that sell bongs and other stuff to smoke weed with, that would give out seeds to get people in the door. In fact, one of the early head shops that did so, they brought a geneticist from out west to work on some custom strains, and now that one of those early strains is available in the Maryland medical marijuana dispensaries. So I think that's pretty cool.
We hear a lot in D.C. as well about something that's being called the gift economy. And you know, this is sort of an idea that gets around the law. So you might buy a T-shirt for $50, and along with that T-shirt, you get a gift of marijuana. And so this allows people basically to sell but not fall really afoul of the law. Do you see that happening with seeds and clones as well, or is that more just for marijuana that people want to consume immediately?
There certainly is going to be some market in D.C. for people that want to get, you know, seeds and clones that way, but overwhelmingly it's people looking for finished flowers, extracts, edibles, etc.
We got a note from Susan who says, I acknowledge it'll remain illegal to sell, but what about bartering for seeds, cuttings, and seedlings? Are people doing that in D.C., Joe?
Well, you're not allowed to take remuneration when you transfer. So that precludes actual bartering, but it does allow for, you know, again, according to your interpretation of Initiative 71, which is our legalization law here in D.C., according to your interpretation of it, allows for gifting along the lines that you were talking about. You buy a T-shirt or something like that, and then you get a free cannabis gift.
So is that more common than something like a seed swap where people swap them back and forth?
Much more common. If you guys are getting ready to implement this law, you should definitely expect gifting brands to pop up right away.
You know, we also are wondering, and the legislature has already, it looks like, you know, started thinking about having a tax and regulate system and a commercial framework. Is that something that, with, you know, a little bit of time in D.C., is something that, you know, is being looked at within the district as well? I mean, does it work okay to not have that?
Well, D.C. has been a really interesting experiment in this non-regulation of legal cannabis. And I think it's been successful. I think that the industry that we've created regulates itself to a large degree, you know, just through market forces. If your gifts are not on point, your word is going to get out about that. Would you mind repeating your question?
Does it seem, does the city council, do the lawmakers in D.C. Seem to have any sense that they need to adjust the law and make a legal framework for selling, or does it seem like it's working okay?
They want to. They desperately want to. I was at city council meetings where they're like, we're already counting our money. Unfortunately, D.C. can't because of federal interference.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, it's Congress that stepped in and prevented them from implementing a retail tax-regulated market. That's the only reason that it didn't happen in D.C. They would have loved to implement that. That was the plan all along.
Well, it's interesting to hear about, and Joe, I really appreciate you telling us a little bit about what's happening in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Joe Tierney's blog is called The Gentleman Toker, and we're talking today about legalized marijuana in Vermont, getting a little sense of how it's been going in Washington, D.C., which obviously has some restrictions that Vermont doesn't because of federal law. But, you know, looking at what's happened there could be instrumental in trying to figure out what might happen here in Vermont. And if you have a question, you can call 800-639-2211. Bob is on the line with us from West Dover. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi,
go ahead.
My question is, if you took and you gave away a gift, which you said T-shirts, but I was thinking more like pottery or something of that nature, or even buttons, would you be allowed to set up at the flea market and give away gifts?
Bob, thanks for the call. Tim Fair, that seems like one for you.
It's an excellent question, and I think it's a matter of interpretation. I would say yes, based on the statute, the way it's written, the way the legislature specifically imposed penalties for the sale of cannabis in any quantity, but specifically limited distribution penalties to an ounce or above. That failure to put in any penalties or mention of distribution below an ounce by process of omission would allow it. That's not to say that a prosecutor somewhere in the state may not try to come up with a theory of a de facto sale. And that's something that is going to be interesting to see how it develops after July 1st.
Does it also matter where that gift exchange is taking place? Bob mentioned something like a flea market or a farmer's market. You know, there is a prohibition on consuming marijuana in a public space under this law. But is there, you know, that exchange, can that happen in a public space?
So consumption, absolutely not. That exchange, the statute does not mention anything about location other than schools, obviously, and daycare facilities, anything that involves children. I think the likelihood of being a test case would be higher if you were attempting to gift in a very visible in public space such as a flea market.
You'd also have to live next to the flea market because technically you're only allowed to have an ounce in your possession at any one time. So if you showed up at the flea market, you could only bring an ounce with you at any one time.
That is absolutely correct.
That's an interesting point. We got a note from Alfonso who says, does growing marijuana pose any dangers to pets? What precautions should people take in disposing of marijuana plant waste? I have encountered situations where a person's dog eats a neighbor's marijuana cuttings and their dog got sick. So Kendall, what about that?
You know, I think that if you're growing cannabis, it's your responsibility to take care of everything from seed to harvest to waste. There are some great things to do with the waste products of your cannabis, composting it, using a product called Bokashi is amazing stuff. Bokashi your old cannabis stems and waste and it'll turn it into food later.
Amy is calling in from Burlington. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi. I just wondered if anybody knows anything about – I know that in Burlington and I suspicion across the state in different places – especially older towns, there is lead paint in the ground from older houses that were painted with lead. And I'm just wondering if anybody knows about how that would affect if you were to grow it in your yard.
Amy, thanks for the call. Yeah, we've talked with Charlie Nardozzi, not specifically about marijuana, but about growing edible food right next to your home and the potential dangers with that kind of stuff around your home. Kendall, do you have a sense of how marijuana picks up chemicals and toxins?
Cannabis and hemp are amazing bioaccumulators and basically pick up everything. It's something that we try if you're growing it for yourself. Everything you put in, you're going to get out. So you really want to make sure you know everything that you – where you grow it, what you're putting on it, what soil it's in, what water you're using, the works.
Beth writes in to say, as someone working in prevention for 20 years, I'm pretty sure that current users know where they can get their drugs of choice. This is not news, but an infomercial for cannabis. She adds, your listeners who are renters need to know that they will need written permission from landlords to grow cannabis in their homes. Landlords may also prohibit smoking and vaping on their property, and all public use of cannabis is prohibited, whether vaped or smoked. Above all, please remind adults not to smoke or vape around kids and to keep their drugs safely stowed away from children and teens. And we have a question about housing from another listener who writes, what about those of us living in HUD-subsidized housing? That's a federal subsidy program. I'm a disabled person living in such housing, and I'm an obvious candidate for medical cannabis use. Will it make a difference if I have a Vermont State medical marijuana ID? And if allowed, how much roughly does a small LED indoor growing light system cost? So a couple questions there. First of all, Tim, that legal question of if you live in subsidized housing, this is certainly a problem for people.
This is a huge problem. And the answer to that is if you lived in subsidized housing, you cannot grow, consume, or possess cannabis within that housing because that's a federal housing and it's subject to federal law under, again, which still classifies cannabis as a Schedule I controlled substance. Even somebody who is on the registry, who is using cannabis in a medicinal fashion, can still not have that medicine within HUD, Section 8, any sort of federal funding, housing or programs. And that's a problem. That's a serious problem. Unfortunately, the Americans with Disability Act Hasn't caught up yet. So people with medicinal cannabis under a state framework do not have federal protection against discrimination, nor do they have the federal right to use their medicine.
Kendall, the other question that was asked was about how much a home setup costs. And you must be, I assume people are, you're getting some interest in that in
Absolutely.
Advance of the July 1st law.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of people coming in. Interestingly, the new demographic that I would say are 50-year-olds and older coming in to get their grow gear. So that's really neat. You know, in terms of how much it costs to get started, you know, I tell people you should expect to spend about $1,000 to set up an indoor grow. And that's with everything that you'll need. However, I think it's really important to work with your local grow store in setting up your space. They're going to help you to figure out what kind of room you have and how what equipment you're going to need. So we have some amazing grow stores all around the state. Come in and see me at GrowPro. Come see your local grow store. We'll take really good care of you.
Kendall, one of the things that came up in a previous program was about the difference between hemp and marijuana and the potential for cross-contamination between an outdoor operation for marijuana and an outdoor operation for hemp. And cross-pollination could cause a major problem. It could make the marijuana less effective for people who are trying to use it for THC or for CBD and make hemp illegal, because if it has a THC content higher than what's allowed, that could be a major problem. Is that a concern that you share?
Well, I mean, if the only way that hemp would become more potent with marijuana around is if a male marijuana plant pollinated your female hemp plant or vice versa, and you had a cross pollination and you used the seeds. It doesn't affect the current crop that's growing.
So it would have to be sort of wild sown, in other words, to be a
sure.
Problem.
You know, I mean, you with any outdoor grow, I mean, you know, pollen can make it from Colorado to here. There's you know, thousands of acres in Colorado, and the pollen can make it in the air here. And hemp pollen can get in your cannabis crop outdoors here. Outdoor gardening for cannabis is fairly difficult in Vermont. It poses some challenges.
Well, and it remains to be seen how many people will decide to give it a try. And Tim, do you anticipate this law being pushed on immediately once we start to see July 1st come and people starting to grow and consume legally?
What did you exactly mean?
You know, you
that?
Said we need a legal framework for tax and regulate. And I imagine that some of the areas where you've talked about gray area in the law are ones that are we're going to see some legal cases that try to push the boundaries of that law.
Absolutely. And I also think with Massachusetts adult use program coming on and Canada's adult use program coming on, I think there's going to be a lot of motivation for the legislature to enact a reasonable and sensible tax and regulated program.
Tim Fair is an attorney who focuses on the cannabis industry. Kendall Smith is co-owner of White River Grow Po, a hydroponics and gardening supply company. Kendall and Tim, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thanks for having us.